Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. As I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money, major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 0.035% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75, 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
So you want to be a player, but your wheels ain't fly. You got to hit us up to get a pimped out ride.
You got to pimp my ride.
Damn right.
You got to pimp my ride.
So you want to be a player, but your wheels ain't fly. You got to hit us up to get a pimped out ride.
You got to pimp my ride.
Damn right.
You got to pimp my
ride. So you want to be a player, but your wheels ain't fly. You got to hit us up to get a pimped out ride.
You got to pimp my ride.
Damn right.
You got to pimp my ride.
So you want to be a player, but your wheels ain't fly. You got to hit us up to get a pimped out ride.
You got to pimp my ride.
Damn right.
You got to pimp my ride.
So you want to be a player, but your wheels ain't fly. You got to hit us up to get a pimped out ride.
You got to pimp my ride.
Damn right.
You got to pimp my ride.
So you want to be a player, but your wheels ain't fly. You got to hit us up to get a pimped out ride.
You got
Hi, you guys. I'm Phil Town from Rule One Investing. And today, I want to talk to you about creating generation. Hi, you guys. I'm Phil Town from Rule One Investing. And today, I want to talk to you about creating generational wealth, which means wealth for you, your children, your grandkids, maybe their grandkids, and their grandkids. So down the generations, that would be what we want to do. As a reminder, make sure you click the subscribe button and the bell icon to get notifications when I release new videos. So anybody who knows me knows I'm a proud father and a newly proud grandfather of my little granddaughter, Isla, who is so cute. She was dressed up for Halloween like a really big red strawberry. She's 3 months old, okay? She looked like a strawberry. And if that wasn't enough, apparently they had to do two. My kids had to do two Halloweens. And they dressed her up as a owl, which I like the best. I like the owl one. She looked like a little Viking owl. So like most people, I love my family and I want the best possible lives for my kids and for their kids. But I also know that life isn't cheap. I know how much it takes to live in this world, to be able to retire comfortably, to get into a good neighborhood with good schools, safe streets, you know, good educations. It's expensive, you guys. So I want to make sure I leave behind a nest egg for my family that can help them all the way down through the generations always be able to do the best for the kids. So it's my goal that they don't have to work quite as hard as I did to get by. And it's my promise that I'm going to make that money available to them down the road. So how do we do this? How do we build generational wealth that survives for years to come? First thing is really important to understand that it's completely possible. I mean, you know, names in the news are people who have generational wealth. The Trump family has generational wealth. The Rockefeller family has generational wealth. The Jobs family, the Steve Jobs family, has generational wealth. So people who have made a lot of money automatically start to provide that capital to the next generation down. And you'll see that it's really important that these people who are receiving this financial capital from the previous generation have the capacity and the strategies to manage that money safely. What a tragedy that, you know, your father makes this incredible success and amount of money, works hard starting from nothing and becomes successful financially, and then leaves that money to the next generation, which doesn't know how to manage it and squanders that capital. There's even an old saying about money is that the first generation makes it, the second generation loses it, and then the third generation makes it back again, because they're close enough to the first generation, that third generation is, that they can still see and maybe still got some guidance on how grandfather figured this all out. But meanwhile, their dad and their mom did not have the skill set, often because they grew up wealthy, they didn't have the skill set to handle the money and they lost it. So here's the thing. Anybody can get rich, right? I mean, you can get rich hitting the lottery, but staying rich for years, that requires the right tactics and the mindset. Generational wealth, the kind that allows the rich families to stay rich for decades, even centuries, all come from one thing, the right approach to money. And I'm here to tell you that it is amazing how few families are able to sustain generational wealth. Those families that do stay wealthy for generations, they grow their money, passing on even more down to their children than they were given. They know the value of money, number one, and they know how to invest it, how to save it, how to grow it, rather than how to blow through it. If you want to create generational wealth, obviously the first thing you do is become wealthy, okay? That's pretty straightforward. But if you want to stay wealthy, you've got to pass down that skill set that allowed you to get wealthy in the first place. Particularly if you guys are following me. If you're following me, I'm following Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett's following Ben Graham. We're in a family now that has generations of wealth. So this family we call the Rule One family, and we sometimes call ourselves rulers, right? So the ruler family or the Rule One family, these are people who have learned to invest the way Ben Graham started it, the way Warren Buffett teaches it, and these are people who focus on Rule One, which is don't lose money. And that would apply really well to generational wealth, wouldn't it? Don't lose your family's money that they worked so hard to create. Don't lose it. So if we're focusing on generational wealth and we're focusing on it with a strategy that says the number one thing we're going to focus on here is not losing the money, then we're going to know that we're going to have a strategy that's incredibly conservative about how that money's managed. Incredibly conservative, probably far more conservative than the way they teach you at school or the way they suggest you invest at your financial advisor. If you know the value of money and you know how hard it is to save it and grow it rather than blow through it, so what do you need to do to get the next generation? The first thing is you have to do it. You can't teach somebody something you don't know, right? In other words, you can't just talk to your kids and tell them they should learn to be an investor if you're not an investor. The old truth is that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, right? You might want to teach your kids not to smoke, but if you smoke, they're going to be smokers, okay? So if you want to teach your kids to be an investor, guess what? You need to become an investor. I'm sorry if you don't want to become an investor. I'm sorry if your parents never taught you. I'm sorry if this isn't your mindset, but if you want your children to be successful, then you're going to have to suck it up, bucko, and learn how to invest. And thank God you're here listening to this video and all the other videos we have on this site, because we're going to teach you. You can learn this. It's not rocket science, you guys. This isn't something where a 160 IQ beats a 100 IQ. This isn't about being smart. This is about being patient and following a well-beaten path that's 85 years old. Multiple generations of wealth have been created on this path. All you need to do is just listen and follow it, okay? You got to master the mindset toward money, and you've got to teach that to your kids. And only through this kind of knowledge are fortunes going to continue down the road for generations. So why does wealth seem like it so often just skips generations, right? Why does it go right over the top of the second generation? Wealth being cyclic like that, appearing and reappearing, you know, 2-3 generations step down. And there's a saying that kind of explains that. Hard times create strong people. Strong people create good times. Good times create weak people. And weak people create hard times. So let's think about that for a second and decide kind of where you want yourself to be and where you want your family to be. Do you want them to be wallowing in weakness because you haven't taken the time to learn this and then teach it to them? Or do you want them to be strong, who can take what you've started and build on it from there? In many cases, a person who goes from being poor to being wealthy knows the value of money and the value of hard work themselves. That's you and that's me. But often we don't pass these lessons down to our kids. I mean, listen, I've got a podcast called Invested, right, where I'm trying to teach my 36-year-old daughter how to invest. I mean, I'm a living example of a person that knows how to do this, actually teaches other people to do this, and I still haven't been able to teach my kids these lessons. But I've got some good news for you. They get a little older, they start to pay attention to this stuff, and some of that must seep in, because Danielle is getting really, really good at this, and my other kids, Elena, Daniel, and Hunter, are all starting to pay a lot of attention. So look, I'm a perfect example of a guy who made money, and you know what? If I hadn't worked harder on this, I would only be passing down the money, and my kids would just go on, and maybe without any more lessons on how to invest properly, they'd turn out just squander the wealth I've created, the wealth they inherited, since they don't know how to preserve and grow it. And then I got to think, gosh, I hope Isla can figure this out. So if you truly want to create generational wealth, it's essential that you pass down more than just money to your heirs. You've got to do the work. And it ain't easy, baby, because you know that the rule about an expert is it's got to be somebody at least 60 miles away. And that means you to your kids are not an expert. That means you're going to have to go to extra time and trouble, try to get to them as early as possible, but take the extra time and trouble to try to teach them step by step as you're building that wealth. You got to teach them all the same lessons that allowed you to become wealthy in the first place. Lessons such as the value of money, the importance of putting money ahead, putting money to yourself first before you set up a budget, the role of hard work, how you understand a business, right? Meaning, moat, management, margin of safety. These are the basics of investing. They're not hard. You can teach your kids that first, understand the business. Second, make sure it has a big, durable competitive advantage. Third, work with people you trust. And fourth, buy it at a margin of safety. This is not rocket science. It's worth it. It's worth it so much. to preserve that wealth through more than just a single generation. It's also important to remember there are more important things than money. We've already discussed how teaching your kids the value of money and hard work is just as important as creating the wealth itself. Like, working with your children is the most amazing thing. I've had such a blast, and it's been an incredible blessing in our lives that I've gotten to do this podcast for the last 3 years with my daughter in the process of teaching her to invest. I mean, just brings us closer together. However, there's even more to it than that. You send your kids to college, even if you plan to leave them enough money they never have to work at a job a day in their lives, they are going to provide the world with some value. You want kids that are going to go out there and make the world a better place. So you got to get them educated. You got to help them find their dharma. You got to provide them with an education that gives them resources to try this thing or try that thing or try this other thing so that they can be successful at contributing to the world on their own. At the very least, this kind of background will provide them with a work ethic and the understanding they need to successfully manage the money they inherit and, you know, God willing, have a life of dharma that's doing what they were born to do in this life. And if worse comes to worse, it'll also provide them the resources they need to make it on their own if the wealth they inherit dries up for any number of reasons. You never know what's going to happen out there. So spend quality time with your children as well. Show them the type of life that good financial planning can provide. Do some cool things with that money. Don't just sit on it, right? Don't just hoard it. There are too many stories of children blowing through their parents' wealth because they came to resent the money and the way that it absorbs their parents' full attention. Don't be one of those stories. Rule one investing is not about spending 80 hours a week digging away at a salt mine trying to create wealth. We're talking about doing the work. Once you've done the work, 15 minutes a week is all you need. The rest of that time can be devoted to spending time with those kids, teaching them what you learned. Keep in mind that creating generational wealth entails so much more than simply passing money down the road. If you take a holistic approach to wealth, providing your heirs with everything they need to succeed in addition to the money itself, you and those you leave behind you will be far better served, and so will our world. And that's what I love. So now I'd love to hear from you guys. What are you teaching your kids about money, and what are they learning from watching you? Leave a comment below with your answer, and I'll be sure to follow up with you. So thanks for watching, you guys. Now go play. If you enjoyed...
Inheritance theft is basically, it's where what I call a con or a con man, someone playing a confidence game against an infirm senior. It can have everything to do with senior fraud, where they're just taking, they're contacting seniors out of the blue, asking them to send them money, or they're playing the email games. We've heard about the Nigerian email scam. It's a play on that a little bit, designed for seniors. In addition to the senior fraud, and perhaps much worse, is where we have family members, friends, ministers, accountants, CPAs, people who are involved in a senior's life, recognizing that the senior is having some level of difficulty remembering things, not as sharp as they used to be, and they start to make a move on acquiring that senior's assets. It could be done through gifting. It could be done through skimming off the top of a senior's assets. It could be as bad as someone stepping in, telling the senior that their beneficiaries are horrible people, and creating a trust so that they receive that senior's assets. There are wills being placed in front of seniors as they're passing away. There are nursing care professionals who are inside seniors' homes and who are lifting assets, who are acquiring account information, and passing that along to professional cons who are depleting assets from the estate through the bank accounts. So it could be anywhere from gifting. It could be a trust that's created fraudulently, a will that's fraudulently created. And it could be direct assets to accounts through ATM cards. We've seen the whole gamut.
Thank you. It's 12 months since Dad died, and not one.
Jeremy said it!
You didn't say it, Jay.
Listen, back on the subject, all right?
No.
Who was the one that said don't make a scene?
I'm not making a scene. I'm just saying to you, Dad died 12 months yesterday.
Yeah, I know he did.
And it all seems to be about money. It shouldn't be like this, the pair of you.
That's quite an interesting point, isn't it? It does seem to be all about the money, doesn't it? That's your sister.
It's not about the money, like I said.
Don't shout at me, Paddy. Your sister just said it. There's your mum and dad. Is it all about money?
No, not at all. It's the principle.
Why weren't you included if you... Oh, God, I don't even know I'm asking this. Why weren't you included in the will then?
My dad made it perfectly clear. When my mum died, her inheritance of her dad went to us as children. And my mum had asked me, I believe she'd said to Christopher and to Jason, give your dad £1,000 each. When I got my inheritance, I went to my dad and I said, Dad, here's the £1,000. And he said, I don't want it, I want it all. That's the way your mum would have wanted it.
It doesn't really answer why you didn't get any money from your dad, but it's fine.
Because I didn't give him the money. Christopher gave him all his money.
Right.
And Jason gave him some
who
money.
Do you think took this money out of the safe? There were only two keys. It's a bit like Cluedo. Was it Jason or was it Chris? You told my team the evidence points to Chris.
It does, because why would Jason take his own money?
Why would I call the police? The thing is, what was left in the gun cabinet, Chris put in his bank, didn't he?
Yeah.
You know, he put in his bank, he thought I'd already been in the cabinet and took mine and more. And
yeah. Did you steal the money?
No.
Did you steal the money?
No, Jeremy.
Did you steal... No. Well, it could have been anybody.
I didn't know Chris did it, you know.
I think can shout all you want and laugh at me, but I think there's so much more underneath to this story. I really do. I think that you make a really good point, Heather. I think you talk about how somewhere along the line we seem to have forgotten that a guy passed away 12 months and a day ago. It has become all about money. Mm. I don't know whether you look shifty or you look completely blown away to be here, but the truth is it's torn you two apart, hasn't it?
He's blown away to be here.
Well, it's not my fault. You didn't have to come, did you?
Closure, Jeremy. Closure.
Did you steal the money?
No.
Did you steal the money?
No.
How are you going to get closure then? What about if he's stolen the money?
That's it, we're finished.
What if it's neither of you?
The thing is, you two got everything. You got the house, you got Dad's money, you've got everything. Why would you want to do this to each other?
Well, precisely. I was the one that was left to take care of all the funeral arrangements.
I'm watching you lot and I'm thinking, Jesus, if I ever got that embroiled about arguing over whatever, it's not a good thing, is it? It was about this guy. She's right. I'm not decrying £200, whatever,
but it's not about it.
Two blokes. One who thought the other one was golden balls for all his life. Wouldn't make any sense your story anyway.
It's the fact that the money was stolen.
We asked Jason, did you steal the money that went missing from the safe? He said no. Why'd you say no?
Because I was telling the truth.
Jason was telling the truth, ladies and gentlemen. Involved, didn't do it, but knew it was. We asked Jason, do you know for sure he stole the money that went missing from the safe that night? He said no. Jason passed both questions, ladies and gentlemen. Well done, my friend. The key, yeah? Not looking great for you, and you would have a motive, because wasn't it true that just a few weeks before you were due to in fact inherit everything, and then your dad changed his will and you only got half, so you'd have the desire to be angry to take the money off him, wouldn't you? That's what I was trying to say to you earlier. Isn't that true?
No.
Really?
No.
Two brothers, two keys, one's in the frame, one's not. He's clear, come on. We asked Chris, anything to admit?
No.
Did you steal the money that went missing with the safe? You said no. Why did you say no?
I'm telling the truth.
Sorry?
I'm telling the truth.
Your brother was telling the truth as well.
I love you, man.
Also, just to see whether...
So how? What's the solution?
So how do we get that?
Well, here's the thing. We got to recognize that wealth is intergenerationally created. Mm-hmm. Most people who get rich don't get rich in a lifetime. Oprah, that's once in a while. Bill Gates, that's once in a while. Most people are intergenerational wealth. That means what? That if black people want to catch up, we have to start saving wealth and passing it to the next generation. Our biggest problem ain't that we're splurging. Is that every time we splurge, we're stealing from our descendants. You're giving them no inheritance to get started with. But the white child, they're starting out $100,000 plus, a million dollars plus. And I think we have to become more strategic in the way that we do our health plan, as well as our life insurance plans. Because what I'm learning with a lot of these white folks, a lot of them are getting their first, what you want to call a shock of wealth, through the life insurance policy
of
their parents.
We talk about that too.
Yeah, the life insurance policy. Yeah. So there's so many different strategies towards wealth that we're not even thinking about because black people, our selfishness, it's also based on our, what you want to call it, emergency consciousness, survival instinct. We're only worrying about our life. We do not think about those who come after us. Now, you got to realize now, when we got out of slavery, white folks been already building wealth for a couple centuries.
Right.
We started behind the eight ball. Okay? So you got to play catch up. How do you catch up with somebody who's 100 yards in front of you? You have to run faster than they are.
That means
we have to sacrifice our spending habits more than everyone else in order to catch up. How does a people who are at the bottom waste money more than people who are at the top? So not only are you not catching up, you're not even thinking about trying to catch up.
This is good. And we got 1,000 questions, and we know you got a flight.
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate the time.
Thank you. No problem.
One fat meat juicy point. What would it be before you go on?
I would say that we have to build our own schools. Everything we're talking about, the only way it becomes normalized, the only way it becomes a part of the collective black consciousness is if the children are raised with it as a group. Remember, all progress is group work. It's teamwork. That means we need all the children in Jackson to be taught the principles of financial empowerment. All the children of Jackson to be taught how to eat healthy. All the children of Jackson to understand what black family means and why it's so important. Until then, it's just a specialty. As we spoke earlier, diet being a specialty, wealth is a specialty. Think about it. If you're black and you're in the know about money and the laws of finance, you are a specialty.
Right.
You are an eccentricity. You are an oddity. That's the problem. Because for white people, gaining wealth is a regular part of their everyday conversation. Even poor white people are regularly talking about wealth. Black people don't discuss wealth at all. We have to move it from the marginalized status it has and make it a mainstream topic of conversation.
Is there an answer? I know you can't just drop a 2-second answer.
No. Here's what I would say with the unity. Again, unity has to be incorporated into the collective consciousness, which means children have to be socialized to unite with one another. Remember, our kids are socialized to disunite as a principle, right? I've had first graders, 6 and 7, talking about how black your skin is, how cheap your clothes is, how nappy your hair. You're 6.
Yeah.
This is your first year in school. How do you know all this?
Yeah.
The parents. We are teaching our kids to be Negroes. So the only way you're going to undo that is to teach them to be African, which is why I want my school to be residential. Because I know sending them back to the same house that created the illness after school is going to undo everything I do from 8 to 3. You got the kids for 16 hours. I got them for 8. I can't win. Because the brain is the creature of repetition.
Yes.
Whoever gets to this the most will rule it. What did Adolf Hitler say? Come up with a lie, keep on telling the lie, be consistent with it. It ain't got to be the truth. But the brain cannot resist the temptation to believe something that is regularly presented before it. Repetition wins. We give our kids to white folks for the first 18 years of their life, then we want to remake them into Africans for the rest of their life. That's ridiculous. The formidable years of conditioning is birth to 12.
Yeah.
The formidable years of conditioning is birth to 12. We give that to white people.
Right.
And then when they turn 21, they already have habituated.
Right.
They already have a personality.
Yeah.
They already got hard habits.
Right.
And now we want to re-Africanize them.
Yeah. Right.
Who does that?
Right.
What people have ever gotten free, giving the best years of their children to their oppressor, the manipulator?
Well, the one thing that I wanted to highlight, because I think it's very, very critical to look at, and that is the disparity in wealth ownership between so-called African Americans and white people. The disparity in wealth ownership. We have to understand something, and Neely Fuller does an excellent job of discussing this, even though he's not a psychologist by training, from my understanding, but he does a good job. of talking about psycholinguistics and how the words that are used shape your interpretation of your reality. The white man is master in coming up with words and then using those words to impact the way black people perceive our reality. For example, one such concept is middle class, the black middle class. There is no such thing as a black middle class. Class is a Marxist concept, a Leninist Marxist concept that relates to ownership of the means of production. In order to be middle class, you must have access to and control over corporations and institutions. Class is about wealth. What do you own in terms of resources, land, businesses, stocks, material wealth? That's what class is about. Black people don't own a damn thing. We don't have class. We simply have black people who make a little bit more money than other black people. But that does not put them in a different class. When you look at poor white people and you look at the white middle class, what makes the white middle class separate from poor whites? It's because they own things and they are able to live off of residual income. The average white middle class person has investments that allow them to get paid even while they're not working. That's what makes them middle class. They own wealth. If you look at the average white person's assets, in fact, the current census that was done said the average wealth of a black middle class home, middle class, is about $5,000. No wealth, but cash in the bank, $5,000. The average wealth of a white middle class home is more than $100,000. You're looking at a $95,000 minimally, probably worse than that.
Brother Umar.
Yes, sir.
I just want to be clear about what you just said. Did they say that $5,000 a week?
No, $5,000 in total assets for that home.
$5,000.
In other words,
like,
if you add up, yes, if you add up what the family is worth, add up their net worth. That's land, property, investment, stocks. Add it up. And the average black home is at $5,000 U.S.
Damn. And that would qualify
almost enough.
Middle class?
And that can qualify. Well, the $5,000 doesn't qualify you for middle class, but that's how much wealth the average black middle class person
has. Average black. Okay. All right. I'm clear now.
So in other words, the average black middle class person is making more money. Excuse me. They're making more money than the poor black. But they don't have more saved up than the poor black. Because as you know, the more we make, the more we spend. So, for example, if I'm a working class black, I might have a $20,000 car note. But the minute I get an $80,000 job, I want me a Benz. So I went from a $20,000 car to a $80,000 or $90,000 car. Only make $80,000. But because I'm middle class, I feel like I have to look the part. So we end up spending even more money on excess materialism. So when you look at how much money the poor black person has saved and how much money the middle class person has saved, it's about the same amount of money. In fact, there was a study that said that the average black middle class, we ain't talking poor, we talking so-called middle class blacks, is two paychecks away from poverty. The average middle class black family, because of their house and their car, and all the expensive stuff that they have, all the credit cards, if they got fired, they could survive a month. On the flip side, the average middle-class white family, because that's true class, they have wealth. The average middle-class white family could live at least a year if they were laid off of work, at least a year before they would have to start being concerned about how they're going to keep a roof over their head. 12 months. Black person, 1 month. There's no such thing as a black middle class. And let me say this. Look at how they define class. In America, class is defined only by two things. How much money you make isn't one. I want to be clear about this. I want to make sure the listeners are clear. How much money you make has nothing to do with your class category. I want to be clear about that. Two things they look at is how much education you have and your occupation. Where do you work? Let me repeat this. How much education you have and where do you work? So let me give you an example. You have a doctorate degree in education. A doctorate degree in education. But in your school district where you work at, all the white people control all the upper echelon jobs, the middle management jobs, the principal jobs, the administrative jobs, they're all controlled by white folks and a couple of token Negroes. So the fact that you have a doctorate degree did not earn you more money because there's no positions in your school district to which you can graduate to. So you have a doctorate. You're still a school teacher. You're raising three or four children, possibly by yourself, which is a situation many of our sisters are in who are educators. So you're raising two or three children by yourself. You're a school teacher. You have a doctorate degree. Because you have a doctorate and because you're a school teacher, you're going to be considered probably upper class with your doctorate. Your doctorate degree makes you upper class or at least upper middle class on paper. But in reality, the situation is what? Because you're only making about $40,000 in your job, and that growth, not net, your take-home pay is less than $20,000 a year, and you're raising three or four kids, despite having a doctorate, despite being a teacher, your take-home pay is equivalent or less than a black person who's considered to be poor. An impoverished black person has the same take-home pay as many so-called upper-middle-class black people. It is the illusion of progress. The same amount of money they have to spend is no different than a poor black person. They're identical in terms of actual net pay that comes home. But because they have a doctorate and because they're a school teacher or a physician or an engineer or a counselor or a school nurse, okay, they're automatically considered middle class when the truth of the matter is they're just as broke as the people in the ghetto.
Lord have mercy. Collect your Gucci bag is going down. That's interesting. My eyes are wide open right now.
Now, okay. We saw the spending report for black people, and I think this was the 2011 spending report. 2012's might not be out yet. For 2011, they said black people spend more time on the internet, more money on the cell phone, more money on cell phone minutes, more money on internet minutes. So we are clearly dominating in the, what do we call that, World Wide Web markets. Now,
yes.
The interesting thing that the report pointed out is black people are different in one major way than every other consumer in America. Two ways. The first way is we are conspicuous in our consumption. We buy stuff not because we need it, but because it is available. This was one of the biggest findings of the study. Black people will buy it just because it's new. In other words, you have an iPhone 4. Nothing's wrong with your iPhone 4. But a commercial just came out and said there's an iPhone 5. So you're going to go out and spend $400 on an iPhone 5. That's only slightly different than the iPhone 4. And why are you buying it? Because you need it? No. You're buying it because it is available. The study said black people are unlike everyone else. Most Americans buy things when they need it. They said black people buy it just because it's available. This is what white folks are saying. Put it out there and the niggas are going to buy it. And then they said that black people, more than any other people, what they own seems to reflect their own estimation of their self-worth. Look at that. What not reflect their self-worth, but for black people, what they buy reflects their self-worth. That's taking us back to post-traumatic slavery disorder. That's taking us back to low racial self-esteem. It's saying the reason why we got a million pocketbooks, a million cars, a million pairs of sneakers, shoes, clothes, jeans, whatever we into, the reason why we have it is because on a subconscious level, we feel worthless. And so we buy all the material garbage as a vicarious way of adding value to ourselves. In other words, look at what I'm driving. Look at what I'm wearing. We use that to add worth to us. You see it in the schools with our children. Our children do never debate over what they know. They never debate over who they are. They only debate over what they own. Public school is nothing but a what? Fashion show where black children go and compete with other black children for how much they are worth based on what they are wearing and based on what they own. This is what we have created, a whole generation of baby niggers who don't know how to do anything but buy what white people make and then use it to look better than the next black person. Think about it. Whenever black people... Whenever we are congregated, what do we do when we're congregated? In the average black event, they stare each other up and down. The fellas look at each other to see how well they dress. The ladies look at each other to see how well they dress. And this is grown black people. The children have it even worse.
Okay, today's It's My House is titled Generational Wealth, Why Families Go Broke, 619-768-2945, so we play some audios on inheritance, wealth, and Lamar Johnson, a couple videos by, audios by him on generational wealth, but what we're dealing with right now, me and Robin, we need some help here, okay? We are to close on about, it's not quite an acre, about three quarters of an acre. That's big. Visualize an acre is like a football field, so quarter, look at it as a pie chart, and cut into four sections. That's an acre. So what we're buying is take just one quarter out of that pie chart of four. We're buying three pieces of pie instead of four. Now, what we're looking for, Robin and I are brainstorming right now. We appreciate some help. We're looking for the right name. Robin's a podcaster, and she's a guru podcasters. I'm a podcaster. So we want this land that we're going to develop, it'll be off the grid, you know, with solar technology and stuff like that. We want it to be a place where podcasters or bloggers or whatever you want to call them can come, have events, chill out. And this is like nobody else is doing this, because most people that do podcast meetups, they're going to a local hotel, motel, conference room, Starbucks, something like that. But we're buying land, okay? So we're looking for the right name. Right name. Let me open up Robin's mic. And if you want to throw in a name, fine. If you want to talk about generational wealth, fine also, because like I said, today the title is Why Families Go Broke. But, and you know what? This is one of the topics that we can have offline, face-to-face, at a community that is designed for bloggers and podcasters. All right. So, because on YouTube, you know, even if it's YouTube Live or Facebook Live, there's still a separation, but you can have that same discussion face-to-face, and then, you know, we'll have pods there that you can, sleeping pods that you can sleep in there. Anyway, Robin, so let's continue our brainstorming. Anybody that wants to get in on it, oh, wait a minute, let me see, Podzilla. Podzilla. Okay, let me see. Oh, gone.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Well, let's see what we've got. All right, hold it. We have Podcasters Village. That was one of the names. What else?
Let me look.
Oh, let me add some time over to the clock. We have Podcasters or
Podcast Village
is doing. All right, you said hold it, Pod. Oh, let me double check.
That Podville. Podcast Town, Podcasters Village.
All right, Podville's on Podcast Village.
Do you want to try Podcasters Villa? Don't like that.
Oh, did we have podcast? Did we have Podcasters Village before?
I don't see that. I don't think we tried that one yet.
Podcasters Village. Okay, Park. Well, that's to the point. All right, we got Podcasters Village. That's available. Now, before we put this in stone, because we got to get T-shirts made up. 407, your mic is open. Generational.
Good morning.
Or do you want a contributor name?
Both. This is Viata. I can do multitasking here.
Good morning.
Good morning, Robin. Good morning, LA. What came to my mind first about a name, and you're just trying to name the land location activity, is that it?
Right.
Okay, what came to my mind was Generation Rescue. Because the Podcasters Village just sounds a little too exclusive, and what came right away when you said a name, I said Generation Rescue, because what you just talked about in your audios to me is like this is involving all the generations. Number one, as we look at our parents and their health or lack of, they're teaching us that we have got to stay healthy and strong to build this village that you're talking about. So, and then we have to also include the children, because the children are the main focal point in all this, because they're being swept away with LGBT, transgender, all this nonsense, or just whatever, alternative, whatever. And to me, it's like you got to be inclusive of the generations that we've left behind or lost because of all this technology. And so what this place to me is going to rescue generations. So that was my thought. And the main point I wanted to make was that our parents are teaching us now that we have to be better about our health and simplify our life, because as that piece you played, we're identifying with stuff and material things instead of focusing on the inner child, the inner person, and building up our children to be these awesome, awesome souls that they are. I looked at pictures of my grandchildren earlier, and I thought, wow, I have such an opportunity to make a difference in these two souls. So I would prefer Generation Rescue. That's what came to my mind. So thank you for this opportunity, and thanks for the show.
Okay, I like that name for workshop. Not feeling it for a village, though. But that's just me thinking out loud.
What's going to take place in this village? What's going to take place in this village?
Well, for instance, you got right now on this call that the mic's open. We got Robin's a podcaster. I'm a podcaster. You're a podcaster. You can also be called bloggers. So what I'm looking to do is for this particular piece of property, if a, like I say, if you do a sole purpose, if you want a place to do a sole purpose healing, get to meet some of your listeners face to face for and take one of your, convert one of your podcasts into a workshop, all right, this would be home for a home for that, where you wouldn't have to go to a Holiday Inn or any place for a conference room. You wouldn't have to go rent out a church, whatever. This place is will be set up specifically for podcasters and their audience. So if they want to hang out there, fine. If they want to lounge there, fine. If they want to brainstorm face-to-face, fine. Because on the air, most of us don't know, I mean, what our audience looks like. I know I don't. So this is a place where we can actually come out and actually hang, and it's not going to cost a person an arm and a leg to hang out there for not only a day or two, but we're talking about a week, a month, or whatever. Because if you wanted to convert one of your workshops, and let's say, because you're from Chicago, if you held it in Chicago, if you hold it at any of those hotels there, you know they're going to get you for a pretty penny. On top of that, if you wanted to have food there, okay, and you're a vegan, if the Hilton had a vegan menu, which they might, then you can't even bring in your own food. They have all that, so they got the accommodations, they got the catering. At this place, we control the accommodations because we're building it. And then we're able to do some stuff that, you know, that we're taking. This is a community of podcasters that take control of accommodations and catering and the venue. We own the venue.
Okay, but I think you should include in the title your intention. Podcasters Village to me is just so general, and it doesn't, that doesn't inspire me. I think that you're, that's a good start maybe, but I like Generation Rescue because that's what you're going there to do. Is what's your purpose of having this village? Well, we need to come together and brainstorm, and we need to relax and rest and interchange information. But Podcasters Village, what does that mean? I would say go a little further than Podcasters Village. Add some more words to that that include your intention so that the universe can accelerate this whole thing by you setting the intention and the words. The words are important, so you to spend some time on this to come up with the right words, because this is going to be out there in the universe, and so you want some help.
All right, I want to limit it to one to no more than two words. That's it, one, two words max. And the reason why I put podcasters or bloggers out there, because one of the things that I think Rob came up with it, Blog Talk Village, is because there's a bunch of podcasters out there. I mean, a bunch of them, just on Blog Talk alone. So, and a lot of podcasters have an audience.
Bloggers motivated, something like that. Or motivating bloggers or something like that.
It's got to be the name of a town or a village, like Pittsburgh, Chicago, Detroit.
Well, where is this going to be located?
You already know, Pembroke, Illinois. Mm-hmm. We're buying a plot of land with these activities on it. I mean, because like when you said Generation Rescue, good name. That could be a great workshop or weekend event or week-long event within Podcast Village or Podville, but that name's taken already. We thought about Blog Talk Village, but the only thing is you call it Blog Talk Village.
Blogsburg.
Or Bloggers Village, Bloggers Village. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. Bloggers Village. Bloggers Village, maybe.
All right. You say Bloggers Village.
And just that sounds more inclusive than.
Yep. And did we feel and
blog
or blog?
Like
all right, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Bloggers Village is taken. What was the other name you guys mentioned just now?
Blog Village?
Blog Village or Blogville? Blogville.
Oh, Blogville's catchy.
Yeah.
Blogville is taken, but let me see a Blogsville. Does that sound right?
Blogsville. Blogsville can work, and then try Bloggersville. Boy, they're making it tough.
Dang it. Blogsville is taken. What did you say, Bloggersville?
Yeah.
That's available. Bloggersville. Bloggersville, one word.
Okay.
Let's take a vote.
So then Pembroke would be after that, or that's just...
No. Bloggersville, which will be located
in Pembroke.
Right.
Okay, that sounds good.
I'll vote yay. Robin, what do you vote?
Yes.
I vote yay.
Yeah, that sounds good. Bloggersville.
This is an example of the millionaire concept. Okay, using pulling. Basically, watch this. I'm making it more clear now. The millionaire concept is creating social, making social capital out of nothing. Ah, there you go. That's what it is.
And on top of that,
because we are the currency.
What we just did online. Okay, it's basically. This will be a place where we can do it face to face. It won't be the only place, but all right, we can do Bloggersville because Robin's out in the Pacific Northwest. Bloggersville, whatever we get something set up there. Bloggersville,
part of your mission statement should include Generation Rescue.
Yeah, I have no problem with that. I was just trying to pin it down. Because that could be one of the workshops.
Yeah, it will be.
Okay.
Maybe the foundation of all of the whole education.
Right, like
that
all of the all right.
The foundation. I agree with Robin. That's the foundation is to spring from Generation Rescue, and you could have all kind of workshops from that.
Right. Well, like
you
all
could
the
do
workshops,
something. You could do something just on homeschooling from that.
Well, listen. All the podcasts you've done on Soul Purpose Healing, all the productions that Robin has been involved in, she's been involved with a whole lot. She helped me get started on this platform. All right, now I've got over 1,300. Every one of those are intellectual properties. Every one of those can be converted into income on the ground. What we just did, I mean, we did it, you know, remotely on Blog Talk on this platform, but the same brainstorming can happen face to face. So that's the vision. Now, the reason why I was coming up with a name today, I'm glad and thank you, you both. Is the next step is because we got to raise the balance of that $4,000. So we're going to sell. I'm going to have some T-shirts ordered, and Robin told me where to get the podcast's logo. And then we're going, and this is going to be the name, what did we just come up with? Bloggersville?
Bloggersville, yes.
Yeah, Bloggersville. That's going to be the name of it. So we're going to sell T-shirts to help raise the balance of the money.
Okay. Let's do this.
Yeah.
All right, I reserve the name Bloggersville. Yeah, that did take a while, though. But I'm glad
you called
him.
Where are these people at? I mean, I'd like to see where they are physically posted up with their little blogs down and
I don't know how many people are on Blog Talk alone, but there's a lot of them. And then you got a lot of YouTubers. So, you know, that's got to be in the thousands there. So we're talking about, and Blog Talk Radio alone's got to have hundreds of bloggers. So essentially, this will be a spot, and then we can just build a network off of that where people can actually hold workshops.
And I would suggest for all of the bloggers to use Streamio and multicast to up to 30 platforms at the same time. Mm-hmm.
So you know what? We can also build a little studio at this place.
Yeah.
For people to do stuff. So
there you go. We can blog people up.
Well. Viana, any announcements? What's today? Thursday. You got a show tomorrow, so you want to plug that?
Health and Wellness with Viana tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. I'll be covering the latest health news. That's 515-605-9325. And I'm going to be covering a little bit of obligations that cause health problems. And how we have to manage that, because I was listening to a really inspirational talk this morning about how we need to write a letter to our obligations and say adios to our obligations and choose choice, because the difference is huge in our mental emotional state when we feel obligated to do something versus I choose to do this because whatever. So I'm going to talk about that a little bit tomorrow, as well as the latest health news. I'm always given a vaccine update because the powers that be are trying to make mandatory vaccinations a thing in this country, and I'm going to be giving updates every week to show the other side of the story.
I've talked about that, there's problems with the shingles vaccine. I just saw this morning.
Oh, really?
Yep.
A new deadline?
There's a lawsuit. They're doing a class action lawsuit.
Hallelujah. More news for me. Thank you, Robin.
Google the specifics. I just saw it this morning.
Yep, that's what I want to talk. People need knowledge to fight this battle. They can't go in it ignorant because the pharmaceutical companies are saying vaccines are safe, and they haven't done any tests, but people don't even know that. They haven't done any tests to show they're safe. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. offered $10,000 to any journalist who could show that vaccines are safe. So far, he has kept his money. So that just goes to show you that they're lying to us, they've been lying to us, and if the Tuskegee experiment didn't show us anything, then shame on us.
And I'm glad that you said that, because it's deeper than just immunizations. Okay?
Yeah.
And their little experiments. They're doing things like gene splicing and things like that. And so anything that they inject in our bodies, there's no antidote for, and we have no idea what little nanoparticles that they're putting in our body that can be activated, you know, at any time by something that they put in the water or the food or the air. And we really, I'm very glad to hear that you're giving these health updates. So I will be making sure that the listeners on Vibes Live and Robin Lynn's platform tune in. This is very important. Thank you.
Robin, what do you have coming up?
Thank us. We're doing it.
Robin, what do you have coming up? Robin, you there?
That dog, see, that dog just confirming everything.
Yes, I'm here. I have recently partnered with WLMR Radio DB out of Atlanta, Georgia, Mr. Levi Miller. And so we'll be featuring a lot of their programming and cross-promoting like that. They have some really exciting programming going on in podcasts as well. Fellow veteran, looking forward to that. So all of us will be getting an increase in our listeners, or at least we'll all, because I present all of our shows to all the outlets. That's one of the things that I do behind the scenes, is I market all of our programs and podcasts, and I make them available to other markets to hear. So with the hopes of demonstrating a strong combined network that we can stand together and begin to get monetization on, because we have a lot of real estate, and we're missing a lot of passive income. Blog Talk makes a lot of money running ads, and you might be able to join their revenue sharing program, but you should be able to take orders and run commercials on your own. You see, and so if we have a strong market where we can show where we're getting a lot of viewers and listeners in different markets all over the world, then we can begin to do business like the networks do. That's how they do it. But we're just going to do it like this on the internet. So, well, that's what my goal is, though. Not making any
okay,
promises.
Okay, you know what? I'm going to cut this short for today because we did a mission for today, and I need to order these T-shirts next. But, yeah, all right, tomorrow, though, tomorrow's podcast, we're going to, the topic is Bloggersville. So I'm soliciting ideas on what you guys would like to see at Bloggersville. Like, see, the vision I have, but I'm just one person, is whatever you're doing on the podcast that you do or have done, converting those podcasts into actual physical activities at Bloggersville. And then from there, we can network out and do Bloggersville, Seattle, or Washington State, Bloggersville, Florida, have a network of Bloggersvilles globally. Because a lot of their bloggers globally. So tomorrow, it's Bloggersville. That's the topic for tomorrow. Soliciting ideas on what was the first one, which would be the model for the rest of them.
Wow. I'm a little tired now.
No, that's tomorrow. This is it for today. Thank you both. Thank you, Robin. Thank you, Theater. Is you guys giving birth to Bloggersville. So on that note, have a good day.